I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. I'm your host, Jason Galloway, with the Wisconsin State Journal. We already posted one episode of the Red Zone podcast this week. Go check that out if you haven't seen it yet. We sat down with Zach Heilprin from The Zone and previewed the Big Ten Championship game and talked about some other things too that were pretty interesting. And then we also spoke with Chris James. So go check that out if you haven't listened to it yet. Today's episode is a mailbag issue. I've already asked you guys for some questions that I'm going to try to answer to the best of my knowledge right now, so we'll go ahead and get right into that. Let's see, the first one's from Thomas at TF Brennan. He asks, does Leonard's NFL experience give him an advantage in preparing the defense for Barrett and Ohio State's offense? You know, I don't think it necessarily gives him any more of an advantage than it would in any other game. You know, I think that I think certainly his NFL experience does help him as a coach. I think it allowed him to, you know, spending 10 years in the NFL and learning as much as he did allowed him to step right into coaching and be really good right away. Obviously, this is only his second year as a coach, first as a defensive coordinator, and he's clearly elevated this defense to another level this season, and that has a lot to do with his NFL experience. But as far as, you know, defending Barrett's, you know, the Ohio State offense and in general, I don't know if he's any more equipped to defend this offense than others. You know, I think that it is going to be a difficult offense to defend. I mean, obviously Barrett's ability to run and run the read option very well kind of gives you an extra man on offense if your quarterback can do what he can do. You know, usually, you know, when you don't have a dual threat guy back there, you know, you don't have to account for the quarterback in the run game, and with Barrett's ability to make plays when they run that read option, they get defenses in a lot of one-on-one situations. They get their running backs in a lot of situations where if they make one guy miss, then it can be a huge play. And Wisconsin has talked a lot about this week about getting a lot of hats to the ball and making sure that they make open field tackles and, you know, in space when it's just one guy versus another. And that's difficult against an Ohio State team that has a lot of athletes and explosive players, but that's the challenge you face with Ohio State. That's why this is a difficult game, and it's, you know, it's why it's going to be tough to win. So, you know, I think Leonard is, you know, I think he'll have a good plan like he has all year. And I think that, I think the defense will play well. I did pick Wisconsin to win this game 24-20 after going back and forth for a long time this week. So I do think the defense will show up and play well against this offense, but it's not going to be an easy task. Snarky Moose at S2000_Moose asks, when evaluating Wisconsin, Ohio State, why does no one consider the role of play action? UW runs it well, and Iowa shredded Ohio State with it. What am I missing? Well, I don't know if nobody's talking about it. I think Wisconsin always, you know, I think they always want to hit some plays in the play action game, and obviously we've seen this year in a lot of games. Wisconsin is, they want to get that running game going first and have that kind of parlay into the play action game. And I don't know if you know, the Iowa game, a lot of people are pointing to the Iowa game as reasons why Wisconsin, you know, can take advantage of this defense and be really successful. And I don't know if you can really do that. I mean, that Iowa game was a pretty big aberration for this Ohio State team. Clear, you know, obviously people point to the tight ends having success there, and you know those two tight ends for Iowa had four touchdowns and a bunch of yards and a bunch of catches. And that's true. I mean, Ohio State just didn't play well in that game, and obviously they gave up 55 points, and some of that was due to turnovers offensively. But I think there's a lot bigger sample size of this Ohio State defense playing really well, and their defensive front being really difficult to not only run against but to protect when you do drop back to pass. So, you know, I think play action will play a role. I think that Wisconsin wants to get to that point in this game, but if you don't set up the run first, and if they're able to stop the run and they feel like they can, you know, they can slow down Wisconsin's running game without kind of selling out against it, then it's not necessarily going to work as well as you hope it will. So I think it's a little more complicated than just saying, you know, Iowa killed them with play action, so Wisconsin can just do the same and throw the ball all over the field. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen on Saturday. Now, if they can get that running game going, though, the offense is going to be a lot more difficult to defend, and play action is certainly a part of that. Mark Wolfgram has a couple questions for us, at Mark W. Wolfgram. Let's see, his first one: do you think there's a chance that Clemson and Miami finish ahead of UW if that's a close, well-played game? It's a big fall from number one to number five for a close loss to another college football playoff team. Committee seems to love Clemson despite the bad Syracuse loss. I would be shocked if Clemson lost and stayed ahead of Wisconsin. But that being said, I'm someone who has Wisconsin ranked ahead of Clemson currently. So, I mean, I'm probably not the best person to ask when you're talking about what the committee's going to do with Clemson, because I think they're ranked too highly right now. I think Clemson's one of the most talented teams in the country, but like Mark mentioned, I think they get a pass for the Syracuse loss because Kelly Bryant went out. You know, they were already losing that game when he went out late in the second quarter, and I don't think you can just assume they would have won. I guess you can't assume they would have lost either, but they did lose the game, and I think they need to be counted off more for that to lose to a bad Syracuse team. And I certainly don't have the number one right now. And but a two-loss Clemson team, you know, with one of those losses being to Syracuse, even with a Bryant injury, that would just, especially a Wisconsin team just coming off a win over a top 10 Ohio State team, I just simply can't see that. I've heard people talk about the fact that, you know, Clemson's in no matter what, even if they lose a close game. I just don't think that should be the case at all. I mean, and maybe the committee loves them so much that might happen, but I just can't imagine. I just can't see Clemson staying ahead of Wisconsin if Wisconsin wins and Clemson loses. Let's see. Mark Wolfgram has another question. Is this the biggest game in Wisconsin history this weekend? And over under on the number of times Coach Crist watched the Ohio State Iowa game tape, 8-10. I hope he noticed the open tight ends, fullbacks in the passing game. I guess that second one I kind of just went over a little bit already. That, you know, not to say that you can't learn things from the Iowa game. I'm sure Paul Crist has watched that tape a lot, and he's going to try to take advantage of what Iowa did in that game. But I do think that game was probably more of an aberration than anything. And I don't think you should be going and expecting Wisconsin to just put up, you know, points at will on this Ohio State team. So I wouldn't just point to that game and say that Wisconsin can do the same thing. I don't think Iowa could do the same thing if they played them 10 more times. So that's just the way it is. But is this the biggest game in UW history? Mark also asked. You know, again, I've been asked this before, and I don't know. I think it's got to be up there. I mean, I haven't been around the program long enough to know exactly, to be able to completely answer that. I know there was a really big Rose Bowl game in the 60s. That it might have been, I can't remember the situation. It might have been 1-2. Maybe it wasn't, though. But it was two highly ranked teams, and I think they played USC in the Rose Bowl, and it was a really big game. So that one's probably up there. This one might be it, though. I mean, you win this, and you're in the playoffs, and you're two wins from a national championship. This is basically, at least for Wisconsin. I know Ohio State might need a little bit of help, but this is basically like a quarterfinal playoff game for Wisconsin. You know, you win this game and you're in the semifinals. So it's sort of like the playoffs have already started, and that's it's clearly a huge game, and it's definitely the biggest game they've played in a really long time, if not ever. David Jurgensen at Dr_Dave asks, who is the most likely junior to leave early for the draft? Nelson, Edwards, Dieter, etc. Yeah, I have gone over this in the past as well, but I'll touch on it again. I think Nelson might actually be the most likely. Nelson and Edwards, I think, are the two most likely to go. I do think those guys will end up leaving. I don't have any inside knowledge on that. That's just a guess, and I think that, and just a hunch on that. I think they'll go relatively highly in the draft. I don't think either one will be a first round pick, but I think those are day two guys, and I think they'll end up leaving. Dieter is the one I'm really on the fence about. You know, obviously his future in the NFL is on the interior of the offensive line. I don't think he's going to be playing tackle in the NFL. And not that this year has hurt him at all. You know, I think that he's done really well at tackle, and he's already proven himself at center and guard. But those guys don't typically go, you know, as high as tackles in the draft unless you're just a really amazing player. So I don't know exactly where he would project. He might be a day two pick as well, but it's hard for me to tell. I'm not really an expert on offensive line play or anything like that. So I can't really exactly project him, but I do think there's a decent chance that he will leave. We'll just have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, I think Nelson Edwards, I would probably, you know, not count on those guys coming back, but who knows, maybe they'll surprise people and go ahead and stay for their senior year. John Hermanson at John Hermanson asks, any early read on the potential mix of fans for Saturday? I know UW sold out their allotment of tickets, but that was only 10,000, and who knows if that includes people reselling on secondary markets. I really don't know, John. That's a good question, but this has been my busiest week of the year. We have an extra big section coming out in Saturday's paper, and I haven't had a chance to really dive into the ticket situation yet. I might be able to do that, you know, later on Friday and kind of see where it's at. And obviously, you know, by the time we get there on Saturday, we'll start to see it fill up and see who's got more there. Although with both teams, it's always difficult with both teams being red. It's difficult to know when you're there for a while, at least until the game gets going, which team has more fans there. But it'll be interesting to see, because this is, like we mentioned earlier, this could be Wisconsin's, might be their biggest game in program history. But Ohio State is also a fan base that really, you know, really travels well, especially when the game is really meaningful for them. And they are still in the thick of the playoff race. And, you know, like I said, Ohio State might need a help from one other team, but there's also a chance they might not. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that of the opinion that if Ohio State wins this game, they'll jump ahead of one loss Alabama and take the fourth spot, even if the other three teams ahead of Wisconsin win. I probably think Alabama would be a little bit more deserving. I think that Iowa loss is really a black eye on Ohio State's schedule right now, but we'll have to see how that how it plays out if that does happen. And I guess the point I was making is that this is a really huge game for both teams, and it's going to be interesting to see what that split is. And right now I couldn't give you a guess. Bill Wesley at Wesley Bill asks, how is this team better suited than the 2014 team? Well, I think their defense is a lot better. I think the 2014 team, you know, their defense was pretty good, but it wasn't anywhere near this level. I think 2015 was really the first year. I'm trying to remember exactly. Sometimes I get my years mixed up. The 2014 defense was, I mean, it was a good unit, but it's just this Wisconsin defense, and I know they haven't played any explosive offenses yet, but I think it's just not on another level than that 2014 defense, and I can't imagine Ohio State coming out and you know, scoring 59 points against this Wisconsin defense, even if the offense did, you know, did commit a lot of turnovers and put them in bad situations. I can't imagine it getting out of hand like that again, at least to that extent. So I think they are better prepared in that way. And, I do think the offense has more explosive weapons on it outside of, well, I shouldn't say that, because that was the year Melvin Gordon had his 2,500 yard season. So I guess that probably trumps everything. The receiver, I think the passing game is in better shape than it was in 14. I mean, you know, I think Hornibrook is a little better than Stavi, even though he's thrown interceptions this season. I do think that he's made a lot of strides, and I think they have so much more depth at receiver, even with Cephas and PV out. I think those three young players, AJ Taylor, Danny Davis, and Kendrick Pryor, those guys are just more explosive than most of the receivers they had in 2014. I think that year, You know, Alex Erickson was their top guy. I'm trying to think of the other guys they had that year. It's hard for me to remember. I forget these seasons so quickly. They come and go, and it's hard to remember exactly the situation they were in back in 14. But I know this team is better, and I know the defense is definitely better, and that they do have, you know, more weapons in the passing game than they did that year too. Let's see, Sean Lingsweiler at Lanzarus 21. Do you believe Xander Neville will play? If not, how much of a deficiency will it leave in the tight end blocking game if it's up to Penniston? You know, I do not think Neville will play. You know, I don't know, you know, how long he's going to be out, but I definitely would not expect him to play in this game. And you know, I actually wrote about this extensively this week. Our film room story that we run every Tuesday. We led that with a big section on showing kind of what, you know, what Neville brings in the run game and if Penniston is, you know, if he's ready to step up and take Neville's place and you know, as far as run blocking goes. And you know, I guess to kind of summarize that story, you can check that out on Madison.com if you want to go read it. But it was posted Tuesday. But my thing is, you know, Penniston has improved as a blocker, but he's still not on the level of Neville, and there is a drop off. There's a pretty steep drop off, and I think Penniston is really going to have to dig deep here and play one of his best games as far as run blocking goes to make sure he doesn't. Make sure he can make this, you know, loss of Neville not as noticeable, because I think that, you know, while he has improved, I think he just doesn't have the consistency yet that Neville does in the run blocking game. And I think there's a lot of times where, you know, he can, I think I said in the story, you know, when he gets, you know, connected with a defender, he's been pretty decent at staying with a block and finishing the play. But there's been other times where he just gets beat off the line of scrimmage. He whiffs on a guy, then the play blows up because of it. That kind of stuff is still happening with him. And against an Ohio State defense that's really talented, he's going to have to really step up. So I think it is a concern for sure. Now Neville hasn't been, you know, officially ruled out yet. We should get an updated injury report on Friday. This is going to be posted Friday morning, and at some point Friday, I think we're going to get an updated injury report. So by the time you're listening to this, his status may have changed. So if you maybe check on that, if you're listening to this, you know, later Friday or Saturday. But I don't expect him to play, and it is a concern. So hopefully Penniston can step up and play well in that area. Now he will give you more in the passing game. You know, we saw after Neville went out, Penniston did catch a 5-yard touchdown pass against Minnesota, and with more reps, maybe he can make a bigger impact in the passing game. You know, I kind of said earlier this season, I think Neville missed, you know, it was kind of going into the season, we didn't really know if Neville was the second tight end or Penniston was the second tight end, and became really clear early on that Neville was getting a lot more reps than Penniston. And, you know, I said then there's just not any way Penniston can have a breakout season in the receiving game, because he's only going to be playing in 3 tight end sets, and he's just not going to have the snap count to do that. And they only throw out of 3 tight end sets so many times. But now if he's the number 2 guy and he's out there for a lot more reps, you know, maybe he can give him a little bit more in the passing game. But I think the key for him is to make sure he's on his game blocking and he's able to make up for Neville's loss in that way. Ethan 13 at Ethan Goffel _Goffel asks, how much impact will not having Bradrick Shaw and Xander Neville affect the Badgers offense? I just went over Neville extensively. Bradrick Shaw, you know, he's still questionable as well. I don't think, I don't believe that, I don't think that's going to be a huge loss if he doesn't play. Obviously they would like to have him, and he has looked a lot better than the last few weeks. It looks like he's healthier than he was when he first came back from his injury earlier this season. So I do think I think he's a decent back. I think they would like to have him, but I think they have enough depth at that position where, you know, maybe you give Groshek a few more carries. Chris James came out and had 7 carries and looked pretty good last week against Minnesota as well. So I don't think it's going to kill them to not have Shaw. Obviously, you want everyone healthy, and he can provide something, but I think they have enough depth there where it's not a huge deal if he can't go. Neville, on the other hand, like I just talked about, could have a huge effect, and we'll have to see if Penniston can step up. Bill underscore Woj at slow underscore creek says, another take on Neville injury, could Ingold get time at tight end for running plays? If not, who is the third tight end? You're exactly right there, Bill. I think they're going to just play a fullback as a third tight end. I don't foresee any tight ends playing besides Fumagalli and Penniston. Now, if one of those guys gets hurt, maybe they throw somebody out there. I don't really know who the emergency guy would be right now. I mean, I think the next guy would be Luke Benshaw, but he's injured too. He's out for this game. He's been out the last few weeks. And so after that, I mean, it might come down to, you know, if they suffer injuries in this game, burning a red shirt on Jake Ferguson. I don't really remember if he's been traveling with the team this season or not. Off the top of my head, I can't remember if he has or not. But we'll have to see. I think as long as, you know, Fumagalli and Penniston stay healthy in this game, though, it's just going to be those two and then Ingold or Ramish to go in there and play a tight end role, like you mentioned, and sort of three tight end sets and play that role. So I think that's what you'll see, and I'd be really surprised if any other tight end played. Got a couple more. Agent O Change at Tyler Barisa. Sorry if I'm messing up all your names. He asks, do you think putting $75 on the money line is a good idea? LOL, JK. But how confident are you that the Badgers will win? If they played 10 times, how many of those would the Badgers win? Like I said earlier, I'm picking Wisconsin to win this game 24-20. I think it's probably a stay away, though. I would not. As far as the money line, like you mentioned, I think that's a stay away. I'm not real confident in that Wisconsin pick. I do like +6.5, though. You know, Ohio State's favored by 6.5. I think it's a little too high. I hear the argument, too, that people think that it's actually a little bit too low and Ohio State should be favored by more than 7. I just don't agree with that. I think this Wisconsin team, even though they're not tested, they haven't really been tested this year by too many great teams. I think that they're good enough and their defense is good enough where 6.5 is a little high, and I would take Wisconsin on the point spread. The money line, you know, I'm picking Wisconsin, but not too confident about that. I think it's going to be a really good game. You know, if you talk, you know, out of 10 times, how many would Wisconsin win? I guess I'd say 5. You know, I guess I'd say I'm just undecided on this game, even though I picked Wisconsin. So I'd say it just goes 5-5 if they play 10 times. That's a cop out for me, but I did at least make a pick, right? I'm picking Wisconsin to win. So we'll see if that turns out to be true. Last one here, Rye Badger at Rye Badger 1. Hornibrook with 17 attempts in the first half versus Minnesota. Chris taking advantage of overmatched opponent or giving Meyer more to think about? That's a good question. You know, I think that, I think maybe Chris wanted to get Hornibrook going in this Minnesota game to give him a little bit of confidence. I also think that they were kind of taking what the defense gave him. You know, obviously, they were stacking the box like most teams do, but I think Minnesota was sort of giving them a lot of those slants that they completed. They completed a lot of plays over the middle in that game. And Minnesota didn't really take it away, so they just kind of kept taking it. And I don't think it was necessarily anything about giving Ohio State more to think about. I think it was more just the way the game played out. I'm not really sure if they were, you know, planning that going into the game, but maybe they were. It's hard for me to exactly say just by watching it. But I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see how Wisconsin comes out. I still think that they'll try to establish the run game early in this one. I don't think they're going to go out there and start passing it around right away in the first quarter. Maybe they will to try to throw Ohio State off its game, and especially if Ohio State is stacking the box heavily. You know, maybe he will put trust in Hornibrook to do that. But I think clearly they do want to establish the running game and first and go that direction and do play action off of it. And, you know, I will say one other thing I touched on in the film room story on Tuesday on Madison.com is that since, you know, if you remember the Wisconsin's first drive against Michigan, they had a 3rd-and-1 and and ran a fullback dive, and everybody knew it was coming, and Michigan stuffed it, and Wisconsin had a punt. And since then, Chris, I think, has done he's really tried to be a little bit more unpredictable on third down, third and short, like third and one, third and two. I think five straight times on third and one or third and two after they got stuffed against Michigan, he didn't run the fullback dive, and I think on three of those five, they were passes, and one of those was actually the 41-yard Ramish run, sort of the misdirection play that was a pretty clever play they put in this past week. So I think that as far as, you know, giving Ohio State more to think about, I guess that's one thing that maybe they did in the last couple games. I think Ohio State comes in this game, you know, maybe in third and short situations, they're not, you know, quite as sure that Wisconsin's just going to run it up the middle. So I guess if you're talking about things that maybe Wisconsin has given Ohio State more to think about the last couple of weeks, that's one thing I can think of. I don't necessarily think that was intentional by Wisconsin to just do that because of Ohio State. I don't think they were doing that, but I think that's just one little change I noticed. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. It's always hard to predict these things and predict play calling. Sometimes coordinators give. Sometimes they come out and do something completely different than you expect. So, especially in a big game like this, we could see that too. So, that's the fun thing about these games. You never know quite what's going to happen. That's going to do it. Thanks for all the questions, guys, and thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter at Jason_Galloway if you haven't already. You can subscribe to The Red Zone on iTunes or on Google Play. And keep visiting Madison.com for all of your Badgers football news. Thanks for listening.